Hello everyone, this is Jonathan Farrington. Welcome back to this latest session of JF Interviews, or JF In Conversation With. I'm delighted to welcome back my guest and very good friend, Dave Curlin. Dave, of course, is the founder and CEO of Objective Management Group. He also happens to be the CEO of Curlin & Associates. But today's conversation is specific to OMG. And here's an interesting figure for you, just really to qualify Dave out on this topic. Since 1990, when he launched Objective Management Group, 950,000 candidates have gone through OMG's assessments. I find that figure absolutely staggering. So I don't think there can be any doubt that Dave is eminently qualified to have the conversation that we're going to have today. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Jonathan. And as always, it's great to be back in your hot seat. Nice talking to you. I always appreciate the invitation.
Well, it's always a pleasure. You and I could talk for hours and hours and hours. We share so many views.
We should.
We should. What I particularly want to talk to you about today, Dave, it seems to me that, you know, sales enablement isn't sort of probably the latest hot topic. I mean, sales enablement has been around for many, many years, but it just seems to me very recently, and I do put myself about around the sales space, seems to me that you know, a lot of people are talking about it, a lot of people are calling themselves so-called experts, gurus about it, and goodness knows what. I'm not seeing many people suggesting that there is a need to audit at the front end of any sales enablement program to ensure that the right skills and processes and everything else that goes into a sales enablement program is going to be accurate and is going to provide a proper return on that investment. Is that your view, A, and B, share with us, even more than I have already, just how critical it is, that front end piece, please?
Well, I think your observation is spot on. And I think the sales enablement folks, whether they're internal people or they're external people with tools to sell, make the same mistake that sales managers and sales VPs make. They look at what's going on in the sales force, and those are probably representative of the calls and the emails that you and I get that sound like, can you do challenger training for us? Or can you come in and talk about closing skills? Or can you help us with social selling skills? Or we need some training on prospecting skills. I mean, they look at where the gap is, and then they say, so we need training on that. And sales enablement, of course, is the person or the group that helps to put that in place, right? Absolutely. I think it's not seeing the forest for the trees. 'Cause whether it's thinking they need challenger training or closing training or prospecting training or value selling training, there are reasons why these things aren't taking place. And it's probably not the very first time that they've talked to their sales force or their salespeople about the importance of taking a consultative approach or selling value instead of price or locking down those deals and not letting them go into, you know, eternal purgatory. Everybody's talked about it and they know that it needs to be done. What they don't know is why, for a fact, isn't it being done? They've heard about it, they've talked about it, they've been told about it, they understand the importance of it, but there are reasons why it's not happening. More training doesn't fix anything. More training just causes more resistance and salespeople to tune out more. And what really needs to be done is we need to find out why. So, for example, a company that wants their salespeople to do challenger training, which is, it's nothing more than the extremist viewpoint of a consultative approach, right? It's the consultative approach with questions, but it emphasizes really challenging someone's thinking and pushing back on what they're saying, and only 26% of all salespeople are even capable of doing that. So it's not even the right fit for most salespeople. So when we look at a sales organization, what we try to answer are the business questions that would have already caused somebody to jump ahead and say, we need to do this training. So we look at the impact that sales management is having on Salesforce. You know, maybe the problem is the coaching isn't good enough. We look at whether they are truly selling value or selling on price, because in a lot of companies, they think they're selling value, but when we look closely, they're not really selling value. They're talking about value, but they're not selling value. And there are six factors that impact whether salespeople are selling value and are capable of becoming value sellers. And it's the same with a consultative approach. There are nine factors that determine whether salespeople are doing it today or are capable of taking a consultative approach. And for all of these things, there's the skill side, but a bigger part of it and a bigger explanation as to why it isn't being done is on the sales DNA side of it. The stuff that's hidden in their stomach and hidden in their heads that makes them comfortable, makes them agree with the approach, and allows them to internalize it and embrace it and apply it and finally master it. And when the sales DNA isn't strong enough to support these strategies or these tactics or a sales process or a methodology, they just keep doing what they've always done. So it ends up being a lot like an elastic band. The training is given, and they pull the elastic band out, and the salespeople go, yup, 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 yup. And then when the sales managers can't coach to it and hold people accountable to the change, and the salespeople go back to what they've always done, the elastic band just snaps back into its original shape.
Yeah.
How's that for an answer?
It's a great answer, and it's precisely what I expected you to say, and it's absolutely spot on.
Well, that's no fun. I'd rather surprise you.
Now, listen, I want to share another concern that I've got, Dave, and I think you probably share it too. When organizations decide that they want to implement a sales enablement program, there's two problems that I see at the moment. One is that they think it's a one-off. They don't realize that it's an investment over a period of time to make sure that they get it right. The second thing is, instead of employing an independent organization and doing exactly what we're talking about, getting an audit, getting the team assessed independently, they kind of abdicate the responsibility to a training company that they've chosen. Okay. And logic defines that the training company is going to propose their program, whether it's right or not. I mean, I know that sounds like a very jaundiced view, but it's in my experience, that's exactly what happens. And there are so many poor training companies out there. I saw one yesterday where the guy said, I've been in sales for 20 years, so obviously I'm fully capable of training your sales team. And I was thinking, what? Where does... so what? I mean, if that's the case, then if time served as a salesperson or in the sales space is going to make you really, really good, I would have thought at 42 years, I must be the best in the industry.
You are the best in the industry. You have to be. The color of your hair proves it.
Yeah. I just like some. So there was two points there for you, Dave, and I've got a third one, but I'll save that for a moment. So do you agree with me that it's absolutely critical to get an independent organisation in at the front end that isn't going to actually provide the training or, you know, help with the implementation of the programme?
Yeah, most training companies have bias, and the idea is to sell their training. One of the things that we do, and by the way, we often provide our Salesforce evaluations through training companies, but it's important to make the distinction that they're reaching out to us as an independent third party.
Yeah.
They're not doing it themselves.
Yeah.
And one of the really important questions we answer, and not everybody likes the answer, but it's important to have the answer, is everybody in the best roles for them? Who can be developed? And it's usually not everybody. And specifically to the underachievers, and every company has them, which of the underachievers can be saved? What will it take to save them, you know, to make them B's or A's? How long will it take? And how much better can they become? And how many companies go and produce out-of-the-box, canned, right-off-the-shelf training, one-size-fits-all, to the entire sales force, not realizing that a third of them aren't trainable, a quarter of them aren't coachable, and the sales managers aren't prepared to coach to it as if they were an expert in that, which brings us to the 20 years in sales, so they might be an expert. If there were any truth to the fact that 20 years in sales made one an expert, then we wouldn't have the pushback that we get from veteran salespeople who have been in the field 20 years and want to know why they didn't evaluate better. A salesperson with 20 years of experience is just as likely to evaluate with huge skill gaps and problems with their sales DNA as someone who's been selling 2 years. Because as you know, the way our incredibly skilled profession works, most of these people have 1 year of sales repeated 20 times. They don't get any better.
Where have I heard that before? I mean, absolutely right. I mean, so my third question is, how difficult is it for sales managers who haven't themselves been trained to manage, they haven't been coached to manage, now finding them in themselves in this role where they're probably going to have to underpin any sales enablement program after the sales training organization has gone? They must surely be left floundering, aren't they?
Which is why so many sales managers resist. I don't know if they consciously recognize the burden that's being placed on their shoulders. And how important it is that they, before their salespeople, master the material and be able to thoroughly and comprehensively and effectively coach to it and impact deals through it. But you know, sales managers are typically the most resistant of all the participants that are being trained. I think that's because in most training scenarios, they're not being accounted for. For the training to be effective, the sales managers need a head start, and they need to be trained really, really good on how to effectively coach and coach to this material, so that by the time the salespeople get touched, the sales managers can not only coach to it and hold them accountable to the changes that need to be made, but they're the biggest proponents of the process, the methodology, the strategies, and the tactics.
And that's very interesting because, you know, for the last God knows how many years, when I've been retained by a new client, I always start with management, and I always believe, I always expect them to be the most resistant. I always expect them to think that they know it all in a nice way and think, well, you know, I've been selling for 20 years and now I've moved into management and, you know, do I actually need it? And it's very easy to turn them around. And once you have turned them around and they're on side and they realize you're not there to challenge them, but in fact, you're there to help them, to improve them, to make them look even better than they already do, then the rest of the program is relatively easy. But I'm always disappointed when I hear of organizations that don't start at that level. They actually go in and train the sales teams first and then wonder why they haven't got the buy-in of management.
You've read the same articles I've read about all the billions of dollars that are wasted on sales training that doesn't work.
Yes.
It's because they just do sales training and the managers participate in sales training, but they're not trained to coach. I think that's the difference.
And they also, those sorts of companies treat sales training as if it's a driving license. Take one course and you must be qualified to sell for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
And it just doesn't work.
And in the end, if it's done right, sales managers become the heroes.
Absolutely right.
They're the ones that make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely right. Do you think the cost of having a front-end assessment, this is really my final question, because as you know, Dave, we are time-constrained, and I know you've got a busy diary too. So I want to ask you this. Do you think that there's a misconception out there that carrying out an audit, a front-end assessment, is expensive?
I'm not sure that people have a sense for how much it costs to do it. And I don't know if they do have a sense whether they think it's expensive. Compared to not doing it, obviously, there's an expense. Yeah. But if you consider how much is being paid in salary to your worst salesperson, the person who's just taken up space, dead wood, that money's already being wasted. Yeah. And you might not even want to know if you can save that person, because you might already be planning to terminate that person. But usually a Salesforce evaluation is a fraction of what a company is paying their most ineffective salesperson. And because it identifies what's really happening and answers the important questions and gives enough direction and enough of an action plan to map out the next 12 to 24 months, it's really a great investment. It's more than an insurance policy. It's really the sales plan going forward, based on science and relevant and accurate and predictive intelligence about the sales force. So it helps the company make great decisions.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. The key word you used there was investment. It is an investment. It's not a cost. And the other word that I like to use in terms of these front-end audits, and it's an insurance. It's an insurance against any poor decisions that may have been made that haven't actually yet been spotted and are going to provide problems further down the road. I think that's another really, really good point, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
And it helps make the training work, because it ends up being the right training for the right people.
Yeah.
And because we're also looking at sales DNA, we know that it's not all about the skills. There's this other piece that needs to be addressed with beliefs and fears and comfort level. And if that isn't being incorporated into the training and especially into the coaching, then you don't get a sales force that's 100% embracing, participating, applying, executing, and mastering.
Yeah, absolutely right. Dave, as always, it's been a huge pleasure. Before I let you go, would you like to just share with the listeners how they can make contact with Objective Management Group?
Oh, sure. The easiest way and the way to get the quickest response is to shoot me an email. And I'm going to give you the easy email. It's just dave@objectivemanagement.com instead of the more complicated one that has my last name, which you'll spell wrong. Yeah.
Okay, that's absolutely
and,
great.
And I will point you in the right direction if you send me an email and answer any questions that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you end up forgetting that, listeners, simply pop over to Top Sales World, scroll down, and click on the Objective Management logo, and it'll take you straight to site, and then you can contact Dave via there. Dave, again, thanks very much. It's a fascinating subject, and you know how close it is to my heart. And as you suggested before we came on air, it's probably much closer to yours. It's your baby, but you know it is such a critical exercise, and I'm just amazed that you know every single sales company, every sales team, every organization with a sales force should be assessing, and not just once. It's my view that you know this should be done regularly, because characteristics change. So you know, I'm totally supportive, and it's no coincidence that Objective Management Group have won the Top Sales Award for the best sales assessment program solution for the last, I think, 4 years now, isn't it?
4 years in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well, let's make it five, shall we?
I'm in. And thanks for making this the topic for our interview. I love talking about this stuff.
There's a surprise. So do I. Again, Dave, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Okay, listeners, I hope you enjoyed that. Look, you know, the message is very, very simple. If you're running a sales training program, if you're thinking of implementing one, if you're going to get even more involved and you're going to create a sales enablement program, you cannot do it if you don't know what needs to be within it. You know, it's a bit like finding yourself in a hospital theater and having a procedure without anyone first diagnosing what's wrong with you. The surgeon's going to be going, okay, let's have a look here, and maybe we'll have a look here. It's absolutely critical. May I leave you with that thought? This is Jonathan Farrington. Thanks for joining us again. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.